Welcome to Native America Calling from Studio 49 in Albuquerque. I'm Tara Gatewood. Aaron Yazzie's love of math and science propelled him into a series of internships, which eventually led to NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center. He's designing machines that are on Mars right now to collect geological information. One of his next projects will be headed to Mars in 2020. But if you ask him about his greatest passion, he'll tell you it's getting Native people interested in science and math. We'll talk with him right after National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The chairman of the Rosebud Sioux Tribe wants the state of South Dakota to share data and prosecute those who commit violent acts against Native women. Rodney Bordeaux addressed the issue in his speech to state lawmakers Thursday. Lee Strubinger reports.
According to Native Women's Wilderness, the number of known missing and murdered Native American women incidents in 2016 was 5,712. 84% of Native women experience violence in their lifetime. Rosebud Chairman Rodney Bordeaux is urging South Dakota's newly elected Governor Kristi Noem and the state legislature to work with tribes to address the problem. Bordeaux says he wants to draw the legislature's attention to the issue.
Just so that they know that this is happening and if they can help us to stop this, you know, because a lot of these guys get away with it and start prosecuting some of these people that they know that have done it. And maybe we can put a stop to this because a lot of those women, you know, they're young, some of them may be mothers, and, you know, they leave kids behind or they leave family members behind that are missing them. And we just want to bring light to that. It's a big, huge problem.
During Bordeaux's State of the Tribes address, he also talked about issues of suicide, meth, and expanding Medicaid coverage. South Dakota is one of the few states that has yet to expand Medicaid for the working poor. I'm Lee Strupinger in Pierre, South Dakota.
In Montana, members of the Native community want faster response when Native women go missing. This week, a march was held in Lame Deer on what would have been Henny Scott's 15th birthday. Her body was found in December on the Northern Cheyenne Reservation. Kayla DeRoche has more.
Marchers ring bells and holler. One bangs on a metal bowl. And people wear red to represent Scott and Native American girls like her who have gone missing. Organizer Dean Wallowing Bull says one thing they want is a faster response from law enforcement when members of the community report someone missing. And if they can't have that, he says they'll organize and do it themselves.
I see like a community Facebook page created with volunteers that will spread out and knock on doors and visit with friends and visit with associates and the last known hangout places of where they were, the missing people, and each time someone goes missing, we start looking for them within 24 hours.
Charlene Sleeper, who's Southern Cheyenne, Arapaho, and Crow, says she drove from Billings to take part.
For me personally, it's because this issue is intertribal, and it needs to be addressed on an intertribal basis. We need to be working between all tribes to address all of the issues that contribute to missing and murdered Indigenous people.
Organizer Dean Walling Bull says this is the second of four planned marches to keep up the level of awareness about missing Indigenous people and about Henny Scott. He says one will be scheduled for when it gets warmer. However, Wednesday was special because it would have been Scott's 15th birthday. To honor her, marchers stop near the street leading up to her neighborhood and sing.
Happy birthday to you!
Wallowing Bull says the next march is tentatively set for Valentine's Day. For National Native News, I'm Kayla DeRoche.
Native women advocates are expressing concern over the case of a woman in a vegetative state who gave birth to a baby at a Phoenix, Arizona care facility. The San Carlos Apache tribe confirmed this week the woman is enrolled in the tribe. The Coalition to Stop Violence Against Native Women says Native women across the U.S. experience high rates of violence, adding those with disabilities are vulnerable to sexual assault. The group says the incident is drawing attention to the need for families and tribes to check on safety records of facilities caring for their relatives. An investigation is underway at Hacienda Healthcare, where the 29-year-old gave birth in December. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is by Odawi Law Group, provider of Indian Law Solutions, and by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite System.
Support by the American Indian Higher Education Consortium, 36 culturally based open-door colleges created by and for American Indians, low-cost tuition for certificate programs to master degree programs. Info at aihec.org. Support provided by BNSF Railway. BNSF is proud to be a gold-level memorial donor for the creation of the National Native American Veterans Memorial in Washington, D.C. More at americanindian.si.edu.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood. Do you like space rocks? Well, our guest today does. Aaron Yazzie has a pretty cool job. He's working on 9 drill bits that will go on a rover headed to Mars in 2020. The rover robot machine will collect samples of the surface and store them for future missions. Yazzie didn't set out to make a career of collecting space rocks. His love of math and science led him from his town in Holbrook, Arizona, all the way to Stanford University in California. Internships and other opportunities opened the door for him to eventually work at NASA. In December, he waited anxiously to see if another project called InSight landed a craft successfully on Mars. It did. Yazzie's contribution to the project was to build the pressure inlet, which is part of the auxiliary payload sensor subsystem. And if you don't know what that means, or have a hard time saying it like I just did, don't worry, we'll have him explain. And joining us through Skype right now is Aaron Yazzie. He is a mechanical engineer at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory, and he is Diné. Welcome, and please feel free to further introduce yourself, Aaron.
Great. Thank you so much for having me today. Yate, everybody. Shiket dosha Diné. She Aaron Yazzie Yinishye. Ashihin Nishle Todachitni Bashishin. Ki ani desha che to khane deshanele. Kutago e Diné Nishle. Adot isia kende nasha. Shema dosha jay. Shirley do ki Yazzie will ye. Hi, everybody. I'm a mechanical engineer at NASA Jet Propulsion Laboratory. I'm calling from Pasadena, California right now, where I live. I've been living here for the past 10 years, but I'm originally from Holbrook, Arizona. That's where my parents still live, and that's where I grew up. And I'm of the Salt Clan and born for the Bitterwater Clan.
Well, Aaron, it is a pleasure to meet you and reading about some of the work that you've done. It's really exciting to be sharing this with our listening audience. And you and Mars have a very special connection, and I want you to share some of the excitement, knowing that all of those years of studying, learning how to use math and science, they led you to this point where you can say, some of my work's sitting in Mars right now. Tell me more.
That's right. I have had an incredible career and educational path that I sort of plucked out of a small border town in Arizona near the Navajo Reservation, and just through many series of opportunities and internships and mentors that helped me along the way, and a lot of my own efforts, found my way into this really awesome career where I get to work for NASA and send things to places like Mars. It just so happens that all the time that I've been working here at JPL for the past 10 years, I've worked in a multitude of projects that have gone to like Jupiter and orbited Earth and all that stuff, all usually smaller roles, but my major contributions in my career have been to Mars missions. And so actually one of the first big projects I got to work on when I first exited college and started working was the Mars Science Laboratory, which it's kind of the Curiosity rover, like that. Usually that's the rover that people have heard about, at least the younger generation. And it's so cool to see them get so excited about space, and they know they've heard of Curiosity on the news or something. And then I get to tell them that I've also worked on it as a Native person. And so, yeah, that was the first it was being built at the moment that I entered, and I could walk down to the clean room and see them actually building this giant rover. And I was there in the room when it landed on Mars, and it was just a big emotional cool thing to experience, to be in that room full of engineers that are finally sending this thing and landing it successfully on Mars. And then very soon after that, I got involved in helping with a bunch of testing for it. So that rover drives around and it drills into rocks, and it takes the powder that it gets from those rocks and drops it off to science instruments. And our team got to sort of build a lab that mimicked Mars's atmosphere. And we would gather rocks around the deserts in California and Arizona, and we would they're similar to ones we would find on Mars, and we would drill into them and practice drilling in a Mars-like environment. We could take the temperature down really cold, and we could change the pressure, and we could backfill it with all these other elements. So the first time that rover drilled a rock and scooped sand on Mars, I felt really proud. I felt I had a part in it. But up to that point, I had yet to build something of my own that got to go on a Mars mission.
And how did you handle that, Aaron, watching some of it and seeing that things were going successful? Did you scream out loud? What'd you do?
Yeah, I mean, I guess for me, it's more like it's more internal, you know, it's like a quiet excitement, like almost emotional, seeing something, because I feel like every time I see some kind of success like that, I can't help but think of like all the things and the people that had to go right and had to help me along the way to get me to that point. And it's a lot. I wouldn't be here today without a giant network of support.
Well, folks, you see where science and engineering has taken this individual. Maybe this is the reason you set some of the young people in your life on a path, or either encourage them in this path that they discovered on their own. You can talk directly to Aaron Yazzie. Phone lines are open, 1-800-996-2848. He is our native in the spotlight, and we're hearing about the amazing things that he is a part of, and we're going to hear more about things that led him on this path. But as you hear from him, you know, if you just even have words of encouragement for him to continue on this way, you can call in too. You can talk to him directly, 1-800-996-2848. So Aaron, when you're doing this kind of work, what's going through your mind? Is it an added pressure knowing that, you know, this is going to be used in space and, you know, take me to your place.
Yeah, it's like I said, it's just such a unique job, and it's a unique way to work every day, because even if I'm completely stressed out at work and something is really hard, I can tell myself like, oh, it's supposed to be hard and it's supposed to stress me out because we're doing things that have never been done before. And we can't sort of do work and then ask somebody to check our work and tell us the right answer. Like, we kind of have to come up with the right answer and prove that it's the right answer. And so that's the really fun, challenging part about it. I've had a lot to learn. A lot of times as students, you think that, oh, if I get through college and I graduate and get a job, then I'm like, I've made it. I'm on this platform and I'm ready. But the secret is that as soon as you graduate and get a job, that's when a whole new level, like there's a whole lot more learning that you have to do. You still are moving up in the ranks, and there's a large journey that you go through after you start your first job. And all of the past 10 years for me working here has just been a big learning experience, not only just learning what I need to learn to do my job, but also just learning how to exist in a very stringent STEM field and STEM career path.
And Aaron, I imagine that there's a lot of just even believing in yourself and just knowing that if you are doing your calculations right, or you're taking this, you know, through thorough checks, that there is a lot of encouragement that you have to give yourself, just knowing, okay, I understand this is going to work. And, you know, you put your full into it. And a lot of times that's a hard place to be, or to feel comfortable with. And talk to me about that, about even being your own cheerleader or not doubting yourself.
Oh, that's exactly right. You've hit the nail on the head, is that the biggest thing that I struggle with now is just to convince myself that I'm doing well and I'm doing a good job as an engineer. You know, like I'm in my entire, well, at least since college, leaving my small hometown to enter a place like Stanford, that was a giant leap for me. And getting through Stanford was a big challenge. And so ever since that point, I've sort of always felt like the underdog, you know, like I always felt like the one that was sort of at the back of the pack that needed to catch up to everybody else, because everybody else was just on this other higher level where they might have come from a really good school, or they might have really smart parents and a family that has gone through this type of thing before. And then the same thing once I got to work is just, it just feels, even though it may not be true, it feels like everybody is just so much smarter than you are. And so me feeling like I'm just this native kid that came from a small town, I have a lot of work to do to convince myself that I belong there and that the things that I'm doing are just as legitimate and are just as real, and I can do as good a job as anybody else can there. So that's something that I definitely had to sort of push into my brain in college, and then once again when I'm here working. And this past Insight mission, that was the first mission that I actually had a piece of my own hardware that I designed and built myself go on that mission and go to Mars. That's sort of like the goal for mechanical engineers in my job, is to be given the opportunity to design a part that will eventually go to Mars. And so I was given that opportunity and it was successful. And so that right there was like just a big piece of validation for everything up to this point in my life. Like, you know, like I it doesn't matter if I took my time and I struggled through it. In the end, I'm doing it. I'm performing just as well as everybody else is. And I don't need to doubt myself.
Well, I think it's really exciting just hearing all of the coverage on, expeditions to Mars and things like that. And then discovering a native person had something to do with it. And just hearing your passion for all this and some of the things that you carry, just trying to make some of this happen, I think it's something a lot of people can relate to. Maybe you're relating to his story because of some of the work that you do, or you just know that your child, your grandkid, your little brother or sister has it in them too. Share your thoughts. Phone lines are open. The added cost of heating in the winter is an inconvenience for some people. For others, it's a potential safety threat. Tribes offer a variety of programs to offset high heating costs, especially for people with limited options and few resources. We're talking about winter heating costs on the next Native America Calling.
Support for this program by the Heard Museum, hosting the 29th annual Hoop Dance World Championship, where you can see more than 80 talented native hoop dancers combine artistry, sheer athleticism, and cultural traditions to create an exciting, colorful, and suspenseful competition as they vie for the championship title. It all takes place February 9th and 10th at the Heard Museum in Phoenix, Arizona. Details at heard.org.
Hey, hey, ya, hey, hey, ya, oh, 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 hey, hey, ya, oh, 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 hey, hey, ya, oh, 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 hey, 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 oh, 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 hey, hey, ya, hey, gosh, ki, katin, li, go, ho ye te na ga ko he ga to la pe sa ke si ka pe sa ke ha cho te ti gen da na pe ka ho lo to le o o o o o o o o he ya o o o o o o o o o he ya o o o o o o hey 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 hey.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood. Our native in the spotlight is Aaron Yazzie. He is working on NASA's Mars 2020 rover project. If you have questions or things you want to tell him, give us a call. The number is 1-800-996-2848. He's in Pasadena, California today. We say hello again to this mechanical engineer at NASA's Jet Propulsion Lab. And he is Dene. Aaron, thank you for being with us. And I want to go back a little bit. As some people would say, you came from humble beginnings growing up in Holbrook, Arizona. And you credit your family a lot for encouraging you to get started on some of this path. And what did your family tell you about the importance not only of education, but your focus in science and math?
Oh, my family is incredible. I actually have two parents that are educated. They both went to college and got a degree. They're sort of I believe they're the first people in at least their immediate family that left to go to college and do that. And so it's really, I don't know. I've yet to sit down and talk to them and ask them about this, but I want to know what sort of got it in their head that they wanted to pursue an education, especially with no other role model or like influence or somebody who's done it before to show them the way. So they were really trailblazers in that sense. And so that's where, I mean, that's a big step forward in my path right there is the steps forward that my parents did. Them going off to college. My mom became a teacher and my dad had this, a journey that started with a pre-engineering, degree at a smaller college in Utah, and then he transferred to Northern Arizona University and continued and kept going and got a bachelor's of science while starting a family. I believe he graduated the year that I was born, and so I can't even imagine doing that. That is such a tough thing to do, but that foundation, they like coming from parents who already expected, they knew that I was going to go to college, and it wasn't a question in my mind that I wouldn't go to college. And even that, just already having that comfort of mind, like I now look back and see that that's what allowed me to not even worry about whether or not I would be going to college. It already had me thinking about the future and about the best, the things that I could do as a student to have the best future for myself. And so I think, that I owe it all to them. That's a huge journey. And even my older brother was just, he was also a very good student, and he went to Northern Arizona University, and he got, he was the first in our family to go to college. And so I sort of followed his path. My dad eventually became a civil engineer, and he works for the Arizona Department of Transportation, and he's actually going to retire soon. He's going to retire this year. And I like to joke to everybody, since he always works, he's the one that works on like highways and bridges and all that stuff, that my father is the person that literally paved the path for my way to college, just because of his example and what he does for a living.
Well, nice. And it's inspiring to hear you celebrate, you know, your parents in this way. And maybe Aaron is a family member. You know what? Don't be shy. You can call your cousin, your little nephew, and tell him, you know, how you feel about some of the things he's doing, or you've been curious about where did he go and what is he doing? Now you're hearing, oh, he's sending things to Mars. He's taking some of this training to the next level. You know, those are really exciting things. You can celebrate him along with us at 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And Aaron, was there a certain moment that really lit the spark or that you think back now and you say, this is all because of something that happened in high school or my science classes growing up or a teacher who might have encouraged you? Does any of it come from there?
Yeah, I'm trying to think back because I get this question a lot about did I dream of being a NASA engineer as a kid? The answer is no, because I didn't even know this was an option for me. You know, like I kind of grew up in a little bubble, and I knew that I was a good student and I had very supportive parents and all that stuff. So I knew I was going to go to college, but I thought, I don't know, I would go to school at Northern Arizona University, like my dad or my brother. maybe, and I would get a scholarship and I would study engineering, and I would figure out where I would go from there. I just knew that it was something I was interested in. I don't know, like growing up, I did a lot of, I was sort of like my own little, I did little projects, and I like to build things. And every time there was like a little project book or something, I would just like, I would take it upon myself to just go like find something and really dive deep into it and build it. And so I think, and then my dad was also like, he sort of, my parents always made us go outside and work, you know, around our house. Cause we sort of lived like off a little country road in Holbrook. And the place that we ended up putting our house was just sort of like a big, like sagebrush dirt lot. And we cleaned it up and, put a house there, and we built, like me and my brothers and my dad built a garage and built additions to the house. And, you know, so I didn't live on the reservation, but I had the same experience of like having your parents wake you up on weekend mornings to go outside and work and help your father. And so I think like hands-on work, thinking practically, solving problems with what you have, and then all of my own little self-motivated projects, all of those things I think really set me on the path to like wanting to be creative and build things and be an inventor. And so that's sort of where the foundation came from. Other than that, I really don't think there's anything that sort of flipped the switch for me. It was all small little encouragements along the way. Like I was a good student, so teachers were always encouraging, and I would do well in my math and science. And our school went to the Science Olympiad when I was in high school for the first time ever, and it was my first time ever doing that. And I remember building this tower for it, and I got second place in the state, you know, like, and I was like, oh wow, okay, like maybe I am pretty smart, you know, maybe I should aim higher. I also did summer programs when I was in high school. Every year, like after freshman year, after sophomore year, after junior year, after senior year. And each one of them was just, one of them was locally, one of them was College Horizons. I don't know if you've heard of it, but it.
Oh, we have. We featured them on the show a couple of times. Go ahead.
Oh yeah. So yeah, College Horizons is incredible. That's one of the things that sort of had a life-changing effect on me. I was a sophomore in high school, and a counselor out of a TRIO program, actually out of NAU, he would come to our high school and he would share with the Native students about higher education and scholarships and all that. And so he sort of singled me out and said, "Oh, you're a smart kid, and I think you should try for this program." And it was College Horizons. And it said on the thing that if you get accepted, then they'll fly you to St. Louis. That's where the program hops around, but it happened to be in St. Louis that summer. And so I was like, oh wow, like that would be the first time I ever go on a plane and go somewhere by myself, you know? And so I was really excited about that opportunity. And so I applied and got accepted. And that program was the first time, I mean, what it does is it gathers Native students, Native high school students, and it surrounds them with college counselors from places like Yale and Harvard and Cornell and Stanford and all those prestigious universities. And those counselors will talk to you about the college application process and how to write a good entrance essay and how to cope with leaving home and going to a college. And not aside from all of that, I was also just like, it's one of the first times I was surrounded by a bunch of other Native kids from across the country that are just like me, you know, like they're driven and they're smart and they wanted something bigger than their hometowns. And I met the counselor for Stanford University there. And so when I came home, I was all excited. And I believe that my junior year was when that's around the time you're supposed to start looking into colleges. And so I very shyly wrote a letter to that Stanford counselor and attached my school picture to it and sent it to him. And it said, like, I don't know if you remember me, but I was at the College Horizons program. And I think I want to apply to Stanford, but I don't know how. And so he sort of helped me through it. He sent me a paper application and told me to like send it in by this day, and you should apply to this fly-in program, and we can get you in if you're since you're a low-income student and all this stuff. And so I applied by paper and got accepted. That was sort of like a big leap for me. That's something that I didn't know was ever possible, and it was a big unknown step for me. I only applied to in-state schools in Stanford, and getting into Stanford was just a big life-changing thing.
You know, you never know if you don't try. And you know what? What a great reminder. You know, here we are starting off the new year, and definitely essays need to be written, deadlines are coming up, you know, filling out forms, but you're hearing what happens at the end of doing all that work. Anything you want to share with our guest today, Aaron Yazzie, call us right now, 1-800-996-2848. We got a caller on the line. We're going to say hi to Billy in Albuquerque, New Mexico, tuned in on KUNM. Billy, thank you for giving us a ring. You're on air.
My pleasure. Hello. And congratulations to Mr. Yazzie for all of his successes. I have a question, which may be rather remote. I went to college with a man named Ed Garrison, who, as I understand it, spent his career teaching Navajo kids science, perhaps at a Navajo junior college or community college. I'm just wondering if that name means anything to your guest.
All right. Thank you for that, Billy. Aaron, go ahead.
No, I don't think I've heard of Ed Garrison, but I imagine if he teaches an engineering program, it could either be SIPI or Navajo Technical University. Those are great. Those are really cool, awesome local colleges and universities that cater to Navajo students, and they have great STEM programs. I've been able to at least interact with faculty, and I've visited Navajo Technical University myself. But unfortunately, yeah, I haven't heard of that name.
Well, maybe he's listening. And what do you think of one of our students from our Native Nations taking it to this level? Billy, thank you for calling. Hope you reconnect. Sounds like he's doing good work, too. We're going to go now to Joe, who is listening today in Norvik, Alaska, tuned in on KOTZ. Joe, go ahead. You're on air.
Hi, happy to be here. I'd like to say congratulations to Aaron for just pulling through with going to school and stuff. And I see a lot of Native Americans here in Alaska that just aren't seeing this thing, kind of thing happening. And I'd like to see more action and getting these youth involved. And I want more kids going to college. That's all I have to say.
Great to hear from you, Joe, there in Alaska. Phone lines are still open, 1-800-996-2848. And Aaron, I'm sure many people are wondering, how did you end up at NASA? Talk to us a little bit about finding your place there.
Yeah, so continuing on, I can pick up the story again after I started at Stanford. All the while from high school and in college, I was involved in the American Indian Science and Engineering Society. That's just a big nationwide organization that tries to increase the representation of Native Americans, First Nations, Alaskan Natives, Native Hawaiians in the fields of science and engineering and in higher education. And they just have so many opportunities. They have scholarships and they have internships. They have a big conference every year. And so I knew I was going to be an engineer. And so I dove right into ACES and got involved as much as I could. So I actually went to college on an ACES 4-year scholarship. I was president of my high school chapter and then became president of my college chapter. But ACES also had an internship program. And so if you applied to this internship program, there was a set of locations that you could work if you got accepted. And so I got accepted to the program and I was able to choose NASA, one of the NASA Goddard Space Flight Center, as a place that I wanted to be placed for the summer. And so that was just a huge opportunity. Like, I got to work at a NASA center after my freshman year of college. I still didn't even know the basics of – I barely knew the basics of engineering, right, because I had just barely taken those classes and still was able to have this experience. And so that was through an organization that caters specifically to Native people who are interested in science engineering. And then the following summer, I applied again and got placed at another NASA center, at NASA Glenn Research Center. And so that too, that 1-2 punch is just like, one, I finally realized that it might be possible. Like, one, I dipped my toe in the water and I know how it feels to be there. I know what might be expected of me, what I might be working on. And I knew that that's something that I was definitely interested in. I just didn't know if it was going to be possible, you know, like applying for a permanent job there would be a whole different thing. And can I get there without going through this ACES internship thing? And so when it came time, my senior year, I applied and got an interview. And I think they saw those past two experiences from NASA and liked it. And so I think having that on my resume really helped me. And so I didn't really think that it was going to be possible for me to end up there until they told me that I got hired. Like, that was finally when I realized, oh, wow, I'm going to do this. And that was just another one of those incredibly exciting moments in my life, was getting that notification that I was going to get hired at JPL.
And Aaron, the path that you're describing, you know, it goes along with what people come on this program, especially when we take a look at higher education or how to get into college. And everything that you've explained are things that these different counselors are saying, or people who work with young people, that they're showing that it is a possible path. And sometimes it seems like, okay, that's never going to lead to this. But you're here, you're telling us that all of it did, and your time and encouragement. And I know you have a chance to encourage young people who are thinking about this. And for those who are just kind of wondering, you know, I want to hear your advice too, of taking that step and filling out these things and maybe even visioning themselves working for NASA too. Give you a moment to do that after the break. Folks, we are live here with Aaron Yazzie. He is our Native in the Spotlight. If you'd like to chat with him, give us a call. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. He is a mechanical engineer, and he also works for NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory. Maybe there are questions you have about what's going on in the space program. You want to ask him, give us a call. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And coming up after the break, we're going to hear more about his work in Mars and what 2020 brings to the life of Aaron Yazzie. Join us again, 1-800-996-2848. And you can also leave your comments directly on our website, nativeamericacalling.com. And you can tweet them to us at 1-800-99-NATIVE. We look forward to hearing from you. We're going to pause, but we'll be back.
Support by the University of New Mexico, the state's flagship research university. UNM is a welcoming and inclusive community of learners, providing enriching programs and services that support our Native American students. The University of New Mexico is growing the number of Native American and Indigenous faculty across campus. UNM is a destination university for Native and Indigenous undergraduate, graduate, and professional students. More at unm.edu.
Oh,
Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Tara Gatewood from Isleta Pueblo. We're talking with Aaron Yazzie, a mechanical engineer at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory at the California Institute of Technology. And we look forward to your thoughts on all this. And you can also leave comments directly on our website, NativeAmericaCalling.com. My pleasure to say hello to our guest who is joining us today out of California. He is Dene. And Aaron, let's go to 2020. You have a role in this mission. You talked a little bit about it. But exactly, you know, your thoughts on jumping into this project, which hopes to answer the question, is there life on Mars? And it's exploring another uncharted territory, as, you know, many people like to say in sci-fi. Aaron, tell me more about that and any thoughts being a Native person and the history exploration has done to us. Go ahead. Any thoughts?
Okay. Yeah. So like she said, I'm supporting the Mars 2020 mission, which is another rover that looks almost exactly like the Curiosity rover. It's going to go to Mars in the years – it's going to launch in the year 2020, and it's carrying with it a new set of instruments. And what's most exciting about it is a whole sample caching system. And what that means is that we're going to drive around on Mars, and we're going to drill cores of rock – preserve a core of rock with a drill and then save it in a nice tube. We're also going to get some soil samples and we're going to save them in a safe place on Mars so that future, possibly two follow-on missions will work to bring those samples back to Earth. And so that'll be the first time that we ever bring anything back from Mars to Earth, which is exciting, one, because we can study the rocks like we've never been able to study before. We won't be limited by the size and weight of a science instrument. And so we'll be able to gather much more information that we've been dying to know about the existence of water and life on Mars, and what exactly in Mars's history caused it to lose all its water and become this desert place. How similar to Earth was it? Like, if there's life there, what does that mean for humanity, you know, how we evolved and how we came to be. It'll be a truly historical thing to find. But also it being the first time we're able to bring anything back from Mars, it's sort of paving the path for sending larger payloads there and being able to bring things back, like possibly humans. And so everybody's talking about sending humans there in the future. And so this is sort of the first baby step in that direction.
And Aaron, do you worry about impacting life on another planet?
Yeah. I mean, yes, of course, NASA does. There's a whole bunch of precautionary measures that we're taking. There's actually a whole team, a section or a group of people on our lab called the Planetary Protection Team. And their whole job is to make sure that nothing we're doing is going to harm or contaminate or anything, bring us sending things to another planet from Earth. And then the same, we have contamination control engineers that make sure that when we send things there, it's completely clean and pristine. And when we get things back, that nothing coming back from Mars is going to harm us. So yes, NASA does take that into concern. And then me as a Native student or a Native person, like, of course, we're very sensitive about contamination and about first contact and, you know, that whole idea of exploration. It is interesting. I'm very happy with the way that NASA handles it. They're very cautious, and it's nothing like our history. And the way that NASA sees it, it's more of a motion or a movement for all of humanity. It's not a greedy thing. It's not for the United States. It's not for our center. It's for us as humans. We're doing this for Earth, you know.
All right. Well, thank you for that. Calls are lighting up. Let's go ahead and take some. We're going to say hi to Christine in Four Corners, New Mexico, tuned in on KSUT. Christine, thank you for calling. You're on air.
This is Christine Benally, Dr. Christine Benally. I just wanted to congratulate Aaron for ending up with NASA, and I just wanted to encourage him more. It sounds like he had some good counseling, encouragement, and mentors along the way, and people that believed in him. And I think that that's key to getting higher ed education and connecting with the career path that he landed in. So it was, you know, I just wanted to congratulate you again for, you know, reaching out, and I also wanted to congratulate your parents for, you know, giving you that guidance and encouragement and probably, you know, all the support that they've provided you.
All right, Christine, thanks for calling there in Four Corners. We now go to Hogback, New Mexico to say hello to Kevin, who's on the line. Kevin, thank you for giving us a ring. You're on air.
Yes, good morning. Yes, another congratulations to Aaron. And some of the comments he made, such as work is supposed to be hard and challenging, I really do believe in that and hope that our young people don't, when they are given a challenge, they don't run away from it. So do it and oversee it and go through it. Yes, and family, I can't underestimate that it's incredible to have good family. Internships, if there's ever an opportunity for young people to do an internship, I'd say do it. I wish I would have done more in my undergrad, but I did a different path and ended up with the government at NMAI, which was a great and an incredible experience itself in creating something that's never been done before. And yes, finding your place, whether it's in a career, college, a high school, and even in retirement. So hope that is all well worth sharing.
Great to hear your voice, Kevin. Thanks for calling. We now go to Santa Ana Pueblo in New Mexico to say hello to Danae on the line. Danae, thank you for calling. You're on air.
Hi, I'm just calling here from College Horizons in Bernalillo, located right here on Santa Ana Pueblo.
Oh, we've been talking about you.
We just wanted to, send a heartfelt congratulations to Aaron and his family for all of his accomplishments, and we really thank him for sharing his story. And we were hoping he could share a little bit on how he faces setbacks in the sciences and within a field that has so much trial and error. How does he face those setbacks, and how did he learn to ask for help in those instances, which is something that so many Native high school students, I think, are wondering about as they pursue college and higher education.
All right, Danae, great to hear from you. Go ahead, Aaron.
Yeah, that's a great question. And thanks. I'm so happy to hear from you guys. I'm a very proud College Horizons alumni. But she was asking about how to overcome setbacks. I think a large part of it is a mental game with yourself. If you come across a problem and you believe that you have it within you, the ability to figure out this problem, you're going to keep working and you're going to stick with it. It's hard for people, native people like us, because we don't, there's just fewer and fewer people around us that have gone through this type of thing that give us that assurance that we have the abilities to solve these tough problems or make it through a very tough time in college or make it through like me in this career path. Nobody's in my family has ever done it before. I'm kind of figuring it out for myself. And so you kind of have to convince yourself that just the background you have, the foundation you have is enough knowledge that you have the abilities within you to do it and to just stick with it, because that's what keeps you going.
Very nice. Danae, thanks for asking. And Aaron, we really appreciate everything that you brought to the conversation today, too. And we're going to be looking for you as 2020, it seems like it's tomorrow, and all the great things you're going to be doing in the future. We really appreciate you being here with us today as our Native in the Spotlight. And Aaron, if anybody does want to connect, where can they find you?
Yeah, the best place to connect is probably Twitter. I'm on there all the time. I'm at Yazi Says on Twitter. And definitely, if you're interested in any of the NASA missions, look up the NASA website. There's tons of really good information, especially for educators.
All right. Thank you for that. And Aaron Yazi from the Navajo Nation, Danae, mechanical engineer working at NASA. Thank you for being with us today. And we're going to switch gears right now and go to Baltimore, Maryland, to say hello to Carrie Hawk Lassard. She is Executive Director of Native American Lifelines, which is an Indian Health Service contracted urban Indian health program. And Carrie is Shawnee. My pleasure to say hello to her. Carrie, welcome.
Thank you so much.
And Carrie, it sounds like you're on speakerphone. If you can pick up the receiver and we'll get you closer and nice and clear. In the news, there is a lot going on about the shutdown, and many people in our Native communities are wondering, how does this affect us? And so earlier this week, you told NPR you were looking at laying off employees because of the shutdown. Where does that stand right now?
So we have, so our board of directors met last night to determine what we would do. We are a contract reimbursement site, which means we spend the money up front and then IHS reimburses us for what we spend. Just before the shutdown, IHS still owed us for October and November. And now we're looking at 3 months that they haven't paid us. So we were seriously looking at having to just shut down all operations. We did work with our area office. They're going to try to find some way to release some funding to us. So the board of directors made the decision to keep us open for a little bit longer. Our employees were able to weigh in as to what they wanted to do. Did they want to be laid off and collect unemployment? Or do they want to work unpaid? And I'm really impressed. My team is mostly Native, and so this work is very personal to them, and they decided that they would rather continue to work and to serve the people with the hope of getting back pay. So for now, we're staying open. We're scaling back the services that we're able to provide. Unfortunately, we've had to cancel our dental clinics for the next couple of weeks, but we still will be around in some capacity. So that was welcome news.
And Carrie, what do you think would be the long-term impacts to the health of Native people you serve as a result of the shutdown?
Well, you know, the other day in our dental clinic, we did an extraction for a young tribal member, and the doctor wrote him a prescription for an antibiotic. We don't prescribe or we don't fill prescriptions. We usually just pay for those things. We weren't able to do that for him, and he didn't necessarily have a plan. Fortunately, he was able to have those medications filled, but normally that's something we would be able to do. So I would anticipate more such instances where people need prescriptions, and particularly prescriptions to manage their chronic illnesses. And, you know, sadly, we've got so many of those in Indian country that, you know, that was my fear. And, you know, speaking to that specific instance, one of the journalists that I was speaking with heard that and reached out to me to offer to pay that cost. And, you know, that's all tied into treaty obligations and trust responsibilities. So it's kind of an upside down world where, you know, a journalist is offering to make good on a promise made to our ancestors generations ago.
And Carrie, for some people who might be wondering and heard me introduce you coming out of Baltimore, Maryland, and are wondering, you know, there's no reservation there. Why is there a need for a healthcare place? Who is using this? Please share a little bit more about why it's important to have access to urban healthcare center there, and maybe even some of the people who are calling on your services.
Sure. So, I mean, first of all, I like to point out, and as Native people know, our, you know, elders were often compelled to leave reservations as part of various programs, like the relocation program, or one of my ancestors was a student at the Carlisle Industrial School, which isn't very far from here. So people like him would have graduated and come and had families. We also have a pretty significant Lumbee tribal population here in Baltimore. Baltimore during the 40s and 50s had a really thriving industrial area, steel mills, were a harbor. So Native people came here to work. That is not necessarily the case any longer, but we are very near Washington, D.C., and we're in the same state as the IHS headquarters. So, in fact, we see a significant number of IHS employees and tribal citizens who have come to the area to serve in the federal government. So right now, while they, you know, are in this place where they don't have income coming in, and we might normally be a safety net, or if we were independently funded, we might be, you know, there's not even that safety net for them anymore. So, you know, that's something that's deeply concerning to me, making sure the needs of the people are met.
Well, Carrie Hawk, Lessard, we do appreciate you sharing this and, you know, giving a brighter view into just how much the shutdown is affecting our Native nations. Carrie, real quick, is there a place where people can connect with your program?
Yes. We regularly check our Facebook page, which is Native American Lifelines of Baltimore, but we're also at nativelifelines.org.
All right. Thank you for that. And folks, that's going to wrap up our program today. It's going to wrap up our week. But we do appreciate, again, Carrie Hawk Lessard for joining us, Executive Director of Native American Lifelines. Also, thanks to our Native in the Spotlight, Aaron Yazzie, for sharing his story, too. We're going to be back next week with many other shows. Monday, we're starting off with the high cost of heating in Native America. Our executive producer is Art Hughes. Senior producer is Monica Brain. Associate producer is Andy Murphy. Marino Spencer is our engineer. Nola Days Moses is the distribution director. And Bob Peterson is the network manager for Native Voice One. Clifton Chadwick is our resource development specialist. Antonia Gonzalez is the anchor and producer for National Native News. Charles Sather is our chief of operations. The president and CEO of Quantic Broadcast Corporation is Jacqueline Salee. I'm your host and producer, Tara Gatewood. Thank you for tuning in today. When you do, visit us online, sign up for our newsletter if you haven't already, and all of the topics and some of the guests that'll be joining us next week, you'll find them right there at NativeAmericaCalling.com. Thanks again. We'll meet you here Monday.
Support by the Colorado Small Business Development Center Network, helping existing and new businesses start, grow, and prosper. With no-cost confidential business consulting and low or no-cost training programs, including the Starting Your Business Workshop, Introduction to QuickBooks, and Social Media Marketing Strategies. More information and center locations for the Colorado Small Business Development Center available online at coloradosbdc.org.
Keshe, look at the bequin, the Yamazana, Antebo, Saturna, Sakadu, Ton Iton, Nante, Queen, Ton Yayu, Pachi, Iton, Arctic, and Itina, no, dear, and Todisium Indian Health Program, our sure, and that's at Todismedicate.gov, that's at InsureKidsNow.gov, Quinawa, no, etta, Tomto, 1-800-318-2596, and Penanakanawa. Look at Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, Tona, Penan, Itulokanawa, Elakwa.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Quantic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.